This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Former stockbroker Bernie Madoff and former New York Times journalist Jason Blair have one thing in common. They both became infamous for their unethical business decisions. Madoff, of course, swindled investors out of billions of dollars. Blair plagiarized his reporting. But they also share an explanation for their crimes. Both say it all started with a tiny transgression. And then they fell down that slippery slope. A new report considers the psychology behind this. It finds that small misdeeds do often escalate into larger scandals over time. Michael Christian's a business professor at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and he joins us now. Welcome, Michael. Good to talk with you.
Well, thank you, Frank. Happy to be here.
Tell us about this report. Now, what were you looking for?
Well, the interest in this idea stemmed out of some of the management experience that I had had working in restaurants in the late 90s and into the early 2000s. I was working in San Francisco during the dot-com bubble. So there was a lot of money, a lot of lavish parties as computer companies went IPO. And I think that that translated into some unethical behavior on the part of my waitstaff. So what I noticed was that over time, forks would go missing, cutlery would go missing, but then I started losing glassware, and then eventually it led to a big break-in, okay, where we lost fancy bottles of white burgundy and red burgundy and that sort of thing. So that started to percolate in my head, and as I went into graduate school and started to move down the path of a research professor, my colleagues and I started to ask questions. Why would this happen? What is the explanation for why people who we trust, people who we might think are good, would actually do bad things sometimes? So I started to think of this as a little bit of a paradox. Why do good people do bad things? And like you mentioned in the intro to the show, Bernie Madoff, Jason Blair are both relatively infamous for discussing their actions in terms of – Bernie Madoff referred to it as a snowball effect, Jason Blair as a slippery slope. But the idea that we can gradually move from one small unethical transgression into another slightly larger, into another slightly larger ethical transgression until we arrive at a place that we never could have imagined that we would be – was really intriguing. And so we set out with this research with three major goals. So the first was to try to replicate this study using scientific rigor. So we conducted a series of four experiments to try to show that this effect is something that actually happens in, say, your average business student, your average working adult. And we did find support for that. Our second goal was to ask the question psychologically, why is this? What accounts for people's progression down the slippery slope? And our suspicion was that it was due to a process of moral justification, rationalization processes. You know, I do something small. I think of myself as a moral person. So it's easy for me to rationalize and say, well, you know what? Nobody got hurt. I can incorporate that into my self-concept. And then the next time I'm presented with a slightly worse ethical decision, I might be more likely to take that route than if you presented me with a situation where, say, you asked me to commit something completely egregious right off the start.
So back to your example of the waiters, if you had the waiter would maybe who started out by taking a fork.
Yep.
He could have been, and I didn't ask whether or not the break-in was really done by a waiter, but on the hunch that it was.
We think it was.
They
yeah.
never would have thought about busting in and taking that expensive wine to begin with, but getting away with the fork up to the cutlery, up to the glassware is what encouraged them then to take the big step. So how do you test for this? Tell us about it.
So we conducted four studies, and the first four replicated the effect. So I'll describe one in detail and maybe get gloss over the details of the other three. But what we did was we brought participants into a laboratory, and we assigned them to one of a couple of conditions. And we had them solve puzzles. We refer to them as matrix puzzles. Their task was to add up a number of a series of numbers and then report how many they got right. And they were able to pay themselves out anonymously for their success on the puzzles. Now, unbeknownst to them, we were able to determine whether or not they actually had succeeded because we told them that they were anonymous as they threw them into the garbage can, but we pulled them out of the garbage later.
highly unethical.
Well, we explained to them afterwards in what we call a debrief that's exactly what happened. So we basically assigned people to two conditions. One condition we would call the abrupt shift condition, where they went through three rounds of these puzzles. First round for no payment. The second round for no payment, and the third round for $2.50. And what we found was that in the abrupt shift condition, people were not very likely to cheat when they got to that third round. They weren't likely to overpay themselves. But in the gradual change condition, we found that actually 60% of the participants did overreport. So we started with 50 cents per puzzle, went to $1 per puzzle, and then went to 250. And what we found was, hey, when we got to that 250 time, people were willing to compromise their, what we assume, their ethical standards and cheat and over-report on the matrices.
So by the time you got to that, on the incremental increases, you got to 60%. What was the comparison? What for the abrupt change, when it was zero, pay yourself, what was the percentage of cheaters there?
Well, in the abrupt change condition, we still did find that there were some cheaters because there is $250 at stake, which is quite a bit for our undergraduate business student participants. And it was about 30%. So the rate of cheating doubled in that study.
So what do you think is going on? Do you debrief them and ask them kind of why they did it, or do you confront them with it? What do you think is happening?
No, we try to keep confrontation at a minimum. With that study, we debriefed them, we explained to them what the purpose of the study was, and then we turned them loose. Then we brought in another set of participants, so a different population, and tried to figure out what it was that was going on. Now, like I mentioned earlier, we suspected that there was something to do with moral justification, what we would call moral disengagement. And we're borrowing from some of the work done by Albert Bandura, who's a famous social psychologist, on how people are able to rationalize and justify their egregious actions. So what we suspected and tested was whether or not people who were led down this gradual changing condition were more likely to agree with statements that say things like, it's okay to have misrepresented my performance if there's a good reason. If the problems are very difficult, then it's okay to just misrepresent my performance. All right. So these are sort of justification statements. And what we looked at was the levels of moral disengagement, justification, rationalization in the participants in each one of those conditions. And we found that in the abrupt shift condition, where people were less likely to cheat, they were also less likely to agree with statements that said, hey, unethical behavior is okay. I can incorporate that into my self-concept than people in the gradual change condition.
I wonder how much of this has to do with identity. For instance, we all consider ourselves good people who are moral and ethical, and therefore we won't cheat. So what I have to do each time is keep kind of adjusting the boundaries of moral behavior so that I'm always at the center of moral correctness. If you confront me with a big cheat right off the bat, I instantly become a bad person. I would have to be a bad person to do that.
That's right.
I'm not a bad person, therefore I won't do it. But if each time I didn't have to be a bad person to cheat for a nickel and then cheat for a dime, I never have to change my identity. I just have to keep pushing the boundaries, which I can do if it's incremental. I mean, is something like that happening, do you think?
Well, that's what we think. Yes. Yeah. So we think that people are constantly adjusting their self-concept. We think that there's other research. Francesca Gino has done a number of studies that have shown that people want to think of themselves as moral. So they will adjust their self-concept in order to incorporate minor transgressions into those self-concepts.
And remember, self-concept is a thing we make up. Morality is a thing we make up.
Yes,
these are all
subjective.
Human constructions, so yes. they're all in my head. I could just keep rearranging the furniture all day long. Interestingly enough, we talked about Jason Blair, who read your report and said, yeah, I think you got it, right? You have the email there.
Yeah. So Jason Blair emailed me last Monday, actually, and it was quite a thrill and quite validating to hear from him. So Jason Blair, for those listeners who might not be familiar with his case, essentially began down what he called the slippery slope by quoting a press conference that he wasn't at in a way that suggested that he was there. And he got away with it. He was a New York Times reporter, and nobody called him on it. They said, hey, you weren't at that press conference. So, you know, he slowly slid down the slope of plagiarism and fabrication of his stories and eventually had a big fall from grace and has given a number of speeches on journalism ethics since. I mean, he's made some very, very important realizations. And in the email that he sent to me and which I forwarded to my colleagues, he had a really, I thought, interesting quotation, which was that it was part of an address that he gave in November 2009 at Washington and Lee University, where he said, life's difficult choices rarely present themselves in one dramatic question or one big decision. Instead, our most important choices in life, including ethical ones, present themselves in small baby steps, one step at a time, and in minor choices that might not even seem to be related to the ultimate outcome. And then, one day, like a workaholic who loses his wife or his daughter's love, you can turn around and find yourself close or across a line that you never thought you would go anywhere near. And I thought that was pretty powerful, pretty poignant stuff coming from someone who's experienced this firsthand.
Yeah, except I don't want to burst your bubble, but I saw that email 3 months ago on Salon.com. It's not, I'm just kidding. That's great stuff. Michael, what a pleasure. Thank you for talking with us.
Sure.
Michael Christian, business professor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Just ahead, what we knew, what we thought we knew, and what you didn't know about Michael Jordan on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.